Good morning and welcome back to Nahiyomi. Today we are in Iyov Membeis, the 42nd and last parak of the entire book of Iyov. This has been quite a journey, so Yashar Kochachem, congratulations for getting this far, one of the most difficult books in Tanakh. Let's appreciate what happens here. This is really the end of the story. And after two very specific speeches that the Almighty has given to Iyov, Iyov now responds in short turn, and we have an epilogue of what happens afterwards. The first six psukim are Iyov's response to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his dialogue, in his prophecy, and he points out that at basic essence, he always knew, Yodati Anu Kichol Tuchal, that you really are the all-able. You were able, you lo yibatzer mimcha mizima, it was nothing that was missing from you. You could do whatever you wanted at any point in time. In other words, Iyov is saying, I never doubted your hashkacha, your providence. When I was questioning you, Iyov explains, all I wanted to do was understand. Because v'lo yeda, I understood from a sense of belief, but I never understood from a sense of intellectual propriety where I myself, shemano v'anochi adabe v'sholcho v'hodiyeni, lishmoi ozen shematicho v'ato eini ra'asecho. Now that I've seen you, now I can tangibly understand, now I can fully understand the system that you lead. And ultimately he concludes by saying, with this perspective, with the notion that there is much more than meets the eye, that there's an otherworldly perspective here, Al-Kain, Em'as v'nichamti al-afor v'efer, I now become disgraced, I regret, I understand that I am simply dust and ashes, I am living a material life, and material life is not the be-all and end-all. A lot of Iyov's questions stem from the fact that he wanted justice and answers within the confines of this world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him that you just simply can't get that. There's much more than this world. And Iyov responds by saying, I now know that there's much more than this. Now after this, we have an interesting few episodes that occur, in which we need to, in ourselves, understand, we also try to hope that there could be some sort of ending to the story, because after all, Iyov did do nothing to deserve this. You know, there were certainly questions, but ultimately, he didn't sin to deserve this terrible calamity. So what does happen to him? So from Psukim Zayin, all the way to Pasuk Ches, actually just two very long Psukim, we are told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Eliphaz and the other two friends of Iyov, to Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sofer, and he says, Chara, he grew angry with them. I am angry with you and your two friends. Why? You do not speak well about me or Iyov. Meaning, what seems to be said over here is that you made accusations about his state of affairs which were incorrect, and ultimately you're already accusing me that my divine justice cannot withstand a conflict of injustice. Meaning, you see somebody who seems to be suffering, it must be that it's a linear program, the person must have sinned. You could not credit me with having a more sophisticated system of justice, which is three-dimensional. That's what seems to be over here. The Malbim says that, in fact, their claims are duplicitous. They really didn't believe what they were saying, like Iyov actually pointed out to them early on in the Sefer. They were saying it because they wanted to look from, but they weren't really feeling the things they were saying to Iyov. So Hashem says to him, you need to bring korbanos, bring oilos, and Iyov should pray for you. And that's what happens. Our next little section of the parak, Tes to Yud Aleph, describes how Iyov does actually pray for his friends. They bring these seven korbanos. And seven, of course, is an important number because seven korbanos is always connected, is corresponding to the nations of the world. And we know that this book is certainly very universal, according to some of the Mefarshim. Iyov and his friends were not even necessarily Jewish. They were not Israelite or Hebrew. And so therefore it makes a lot of sense that this is a more universal set of korbanos. And he prays for them, and Hashem returns everything to Iyov. In fact, not only does it return Shavus Iyov, that which was taken from Iyov, but he actually brings back Mishneh, a double. Vayosef Hashem is kol asher li'Iyov le'mishneh. Everything is doubled. Now his family, his brothers, his sisters, his relatives all come, and they eat with him, and they comfort him over the evil, and they give him all these guests. One thing which is worthwhile thinking about is that when Iyov's salvation comes, the turning point is when Iyov prays for others. Up till now, he's complained about God, but he's not actually prayed to God. Isn't it interesting that the salvation comes when he stops thinking about his own state or complaining about the state of affairs or describing the state of affairs, and he starts praying to change the state of affairs. Another thing to be thought about in this prayer of Iyov is that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu is using it as a mandate to support Iyov. You, friends of Iyov, accused him of being bad. Well, I'll show you that it's upon his mouth that your salvation will come as well. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu returned everything of Iyov and doubled it. And in fact, it's interesting because in the next few psukim, the last section over here, psukim Yud Beis to Yud Zayin, we're told that Iyov's blessings are doubled. He has 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 cattle, 1,000 donkeys. This is precisely double of what was described at the beginning of the Sefer. He describes his 7 sons and his 3 daughters, but they don't double in number, but now it describes their beauty and wealth. But there were no better, more sublime than the beauty of the daughters of Iyov and the sons with their nachla, their inheritance. And describes how Iyov lives another 140 years. He lives to a ripe old age of 210, and he lives and sees 4 generations of children and dies. Vayomos Iyov zokein usvayomim, at an old age and satiated of days. A few things just to think about right now. And the first thing is that, first of all, where were his friends and family till now? I mean, like, why was he sitting there all by himself and no one was coming to comfort him? And suddenly now that everything's all right, everybody's there, they're at the party, they're responding to the Evite now. So the answer is, says Rav Schwab, is that they, like the friends of Eov, had abandoned him because they saw theodicy. They said, look, he must be suffering for a reason. If he's suffering this terribly, he must be a really rotten fellow at heart. We don't want the kids hanging around there, you know? We don't want to let people have too much time under that influence. So they themselves were kind of like the friends of Eov. They abandoned based on their projections, and they were ultimately wrong as well. One question is just worthwhile thinking about is, how can anybody possibly be restored, have restoration for, you know, like meaning to say, it sounds like he has this new family now, he has new possessions. How does that work? You know, you can have just double as many cattle, I understand, and you know, but the family, how does that work? How's that ever a sense of comfort? So, reminds me of the words of the poet Royal in England in the Victorian period, Lord Alfred Tennyson, who said, "'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all." There's something to think about there when it comes to the idea of him having had a meaningful relationship, of him having these relationships that still was meaningful. However, the Malbim and the Ramban, Chazal, the Ibn Ezra, all suggest that no, in fact, this is not the correct way to read this. The way to read this is that when it says that Hashem returned it, it wasn't the Satan ever killed the family or the cattle or the real estate in the beginning at all. In fact, the Satan obfuscated. He simply took it away and he delivered the report of destruction, which is fascinating because the Ramban actually brings a proof that when it describes the events that occurred at the beginning of the Sefer, it doesn't describe the events actually happening, it describes the report of the events in the hands of the messenger. Which means to say this is all one big misunderstanding, essentially, meaning to say Iyov was given the impression, and no doubt it was an important impression because with this kind of news, this is the kind of thing anybody would want to hear more about. But nonetheless, the Satan was able to cover his tracks well enough that Iyov felt and went through this entire terrible, terrible period, but it was actually really an illusion, and Hashem was able to return it to him. So this is really quite something to think about. That sort of sheds a different light on this whole idea as well. What is also worthwhile considering in this is that the names of the daughters of Iyov, if that's true, why is that he's naming his daughters? Why is he naming them if they're the same daughters? So it could be that he's rededicating them, he's seeing in them new beauty. It's interesting to actually look at those names for a moment. The idea of Yemima sounds like daylight. The idea of Ketzia is some sort of natural fragrance, and Keren Apuch is a type of makeup or glitter. So why do we hear these names? So Rav Schwab makes 2 suggestions. He says that it could be these are describing 3 stages of life that a person goes through. That when we talk about beauty, and we talk about feminine beauty right now, at the beginning of life, really sunlight is all one needs. When one sees the beauty, one appreciates it. But later on, as a person matures, they add fragrance and to add beauty. And later on, there needs to be makeup as well. So they talk about different stages of maturity and beauty, which Eov is attributing to all the different stages of life. He's able to appreciate the beauty. But it could be another way of understanding this. It could be the way of influence that a person actually has. At the beginning of life, there's the Yemimah, but it's a person is perfectly beautiful. But, however, as they mature, they need to spread the smell of that perfume and also the shine of that perfume, the Ketziah and the Keret Hapuch, later on into life, as a metaphor for the responsibility a person has enough. And this he was able to witness these different stages of beauty, these different stages of influence in his own children. It's worthwhile noting at the end of the parak that the words used to describe Eov's demise, Vayamos Eov Zakenu Svayamim, is in fact the exact description used by Avraham Avinu, Zakenu Svayam, that he was also elderly and satiated. This is naturally something which makes sense because the Gemara has paralleled Eov greatly to Avraham Avinu in many ways. In fact, it's one of the triggers for the conversation of the Satan and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hashem says, do you see my Eov, who am I, my servant Eov? And ultimately the Satan says he's not like Avraham Avinu. He dies like Avraham Avinu with one little asterisk. That is, as Rav Shua points out, that at the end of the day, he did trust in Hashem and he went through this whole process, but he did not fully pass the test. The test really was, Eov, are you going to get through this and understand this is a test? Or are you going to curse Hashem? And he still did curse Hashem and he was put back in his place and we all understand that. But at the end of the day, he dies, but he's not an Avraham Avinu. He dies, but he's not part of the patriarchs of our nation. He does not remain that person. He's a person who learned a very important lesson in life, but he wasn't an Avraham Avinu. Perhaps the text is emphasizing the difference as well. It's worthwhile also noting over here, and this is perhaps the greatest irony of them all, is that once Eov is willing to recognize, this is what the Malbim says at the end of the Sefer, once Eov is willing to recognize that ultimately he is Afar ve'efer, that he is dust and ashes, he's a material body which is fading away from the moment it's born, and that the achievements in this world are very illusory and short-lived. At that point in time is when he's able to enjoy life, and he has a long and enjoyable life. Isn't it interesting? At the beginning of the Sefer, when Eov lived in perhaps his previous mindset, he lived in ultimate fear, constant fear. He was bringing his karbonos for his children all the time for fear that they would sin. And that was because, in a certain sense, his conception of divine reward and punishment was within the confines of this world. So he was always in a state of fear or trying to protect his numerous assets. Marbe nechosim, marbe daaga. The more one has, the more vulnerable one becomes to any loss. But in the end of the day, Eov sounds like he's actually learned the lesson. And he realizes that not here and not now. That's not the be-all and end-all. And therefore, there's a certain sense of sevayamim, of satiation in his days, which he learnt from the fact that this isn't the be-all and end-all. This closes the Sefer Eov, really a remarkable Sefer, a Sefer which we've just touched the very surface of, but it's important to have touched that surface because it is incredibly important. It's a conversation perhaps we have fractals of in our own lives and hopefully arrive at the conclusions of Eov without having to go through the suffering. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.